everyone, and welcome to our first pharmacology podcast. This is Jeanette Jones, and today we're going to be discussing pharmacology basics. Now, before we dive into our first topic, I wanted to provide just a brief outline for the intentions or the purposes of this podcast. So my intentions for these podcasts throughout the course is that they will help you summarize and synthesize the information that you'll be learning within the various lesson folders. Now, these are meant to be a supplemental resource, so to be used alongside and with all of your other course resources. So again, the intention is that you are completing your chapter readings, that you're reading all the information found within the lesson folders, such as topic pages, and your instruction assignments, etc. So again, this really is a supplement that's used with your other course resources. And I do hope that you find these helpful. Of course, I welcome all feedback in relation to these podcasts. Okay, so that being said, we're going to dive into our topic, which is pharmacology basics. In this segment of the podcast, we'll be focusing on drug regulations. Now, I'm just going to provide to you a brief summary of some of the key federal agencies that are responsible for overseeing consumer safety and drug regulations, as well as providing some guidelines, really ethical and legal guidelines for healthcare providers in terms of dispensing medications. So those really are the main things we'll outline today. Again, you'll find additional information within your book. The chapter that you're going to want to check out in regards to this information is chapter one, and we'll provide you a good overview of the various drug laws and acts and provisions that have been passed both historically and are currently enacted within our healthcare system. But again, we are going to focus on summarizing the two main agencies that are responsible for overseeing safety and drug regulation. And so again, those are the FDA and the DEA. So essentially, the FDA was really created or established to ensure that there are basic standards for protecting the public, really, for what is on the market. And so the FDA is responsible for testing all proposed new drugs and overseeing that testing before they're released into the U.S. market. They're also responsible for reviewing new drug applications and petitions for food additives. They investigate and remove unsafe drugs from the market and ensure proper labeling of foods, cosmetics, and drugs. And so within around the 1970s, the FDA really started noticing a need for more control of very dangerous and addictive drugs. And so that's how the DEA was formed. The DEA is responsible for all the means and safety controls for the most dangerous drugs. And so again, as a summary, the FDA is concerned with the general safety of standards in the production of drugs, foods, and cosmetics. And it's basically the gatekeeper, essentially, for all the new drugs that come onto the market. And if any unsafe drugs need to be removed from the market, that would also be the responsibility of the FDA. Now, the DEA is only concerned with controlled substances. So it helps monitor the need for changing the schedules of abuse drugs and helps enforce laws against drug activities that could include illegal use or dealing or manufacturing of these controlled substances. So again, the FDA is these general safety standards in the production of drugs, foods, and cosmetics, helps regulate what's in or taken off the market, whereas DEA is only concerned with controlled substances. All right, so the last thing that we'll summarize here, again, keeping it very concise, are guidelines that you would want to follow as a healthcare professional if you were involved in dispensing medications. And again, this is just to really make sure that we have a foundational understanding of the things that should be put in place to really safeguard the public. So whether this is something that you would do in your everyday responsibilities as a healthcare professional in your area or not, it is good to know this foundationally, these guidelines. So it's very important that whoever would be dispensing medications, a healthcare professional, that they would have a current drug reference available at all times. And again, we want to make sure that we could easily identify any of these controlled substances that would be regulated by the DEA. So we want to keep all these controlled substances locked securely, and we want to use double locking. So essentially, it's just like it sounds. We would place the drugs in a locked safety box, and then we would place that box into a locked cupboard or cabinet. So again, the drugs are placed in a box that's locked, and then they're placed again in another location that's also locked, double locking. We also would want to make sure that we're concealing and securing all prescription pads, that they're never left out in public areas like a nursing station, for example, that they are kept in a locked area that can't be tampered with. So it is really important for us to make sure that these are safeguarded, because it could be a possible source of fraud and drug tampering if these prescriptions are forged illegally. The person that it would be dispensing these medications would also want to make sure that they're keeping an accurate record of each controlled substance that's administered, received, and or destroyed by the facility. It's important that these records going back for 2 years previously are available at all times. They also would need to be responsible for keeping up to date with current news of the activities of the FDA and DEA. And again, as all healthcare professionals, whether we're dispensing these medications directly or not, it is important for us to really understand who these agencies are and be able to understand the current events that might be going on in regards to the FDA and DEA. This individual responsible for dispensing medications would also want to establish a good working rapport with a pharmacist. Obviously, pharmacists are going to be an excellent resource to ensuring that we are safely dispensing and administering drugs. And also, if this person were working within an office, it would be important to have that professional rapport also with pharmaceutical representatives. So again, in this short segment of our podcast, we've looked at various drug regulations corresponding with the information in Chapter 1. We've summarized the DEA and the FDA in regards to their responsibilities and kind of compared and contrast those. We've also outlined briefly some guidelines from a legal and ethical perspective that would be used or should be used by any healthcare professional that would be dispensing medications. All right, I hope you enjoyed this short segment of the podcast. We'll see you for the next segment regarding pharmacology basics. Thank you. Hello, everyone. This is Jeanette, and welcome to our second segment of pharmacology basics. In this segment, we are going to be talking about drug names and references. And again, like we talked about before, these podcasts are meant to be used as a supplement resource with all your other existing course resources. So you'll want to check out Chapter 2 as you listen along in this podcast. So again, we're going to be talking about drug names and references. And oftentimes, this is the part of pharmacology that can be somewhat anxiety-inducing, because there are so many different thousands of drug products and medications to what it seems like that we have to memorize. And so it can be very overwhelming. So in this discussion, we're going to be talking about the various resources or tips and ways that we can organize these drugs together to better remember their names and how we reference them. So to kick us off, just a definition of pharmacology, which pharmacology can be defined as the study of drugs and their origin, nature, properties, and effects on living organisms. So we need to know why drugs are given, how they work, and what effects to expect. But again, we have to be able to identify them correctly in order to be able to do those various things with drugs appropriately. So the various tools that can be utilized to help us organize all these thousands of drugs are things like drug references. And so there's a variety of types of drug reference manuals that are available at all different levels, from the layperson all the way up to the pharmacist. And so it's helpful for us to be able to utilize a drug resource at times to look up information regarding a certain medication. Also, another useful tip is grouping drugs together under broad categories. And we're going to be talking about that in just a minute. And then also using the same basic terms and definitions in order to identify how and what that drug does. And so again, just like when we were starting out as healthcare professionals, a likely one of our beginning courses was medical terminology, right? Because we had to be able to speak the same language as everybody else in the healthcare field. And so using the same basic pharmacology language is really helpful to make sure, again, that we're accurately identifying the medications that we're using on a daily basis or that our patients may be using. So one of the main ways to do that is through drug classifications. So a classification is essentially a category that is organized. It organizes drugs by their therapeutic use. So I'll say that again. Classifications is essentially drugs that are categorized by their therapeutic use. And so they're all grouped together under the same category according to their therapeutic use. Now, depending on how many therapeutic uses a medication has depends on how many drug classifications it has. For example, the example that's used in your text as well is aspirin. So aspirin has many different effects on the body, and so therefore it is a part of a variety of different drug classifications or categories. So for example, aspirin can be used to relieve pain, so it's in the classification for analgesics. It can be used to reduce fever, so therefore it's in the classification for antipyretics. It can be used to reduce inflammation of tissues, so therefore it can be in the drug classification anti-inflammatory. And it also can be used as an antiplatelet, making it a part of the classification for antithrombotic agents. Now, on the other side of that, a medication called cyclobenzaprine or Flexeril is only used for one therapeutic effect, which is relieving muscle spasms. Therefore, it's only part of one classification, which is muscle relaxants. So again, classifications are where drugs are brought into these subcategories according to their therapeutic use. And a drug can be in one or multiple drug classifications, depending on if it has one or more therapeutic uses. Another way that we can start to distinguish drugs from one another is not just its classification, but also, again, what it does and how it works. So within a drug classification, those drugs are also grouped by their therapeutic use, their most common side effects, the precautions to be used, the contraindications for the drugs in that classification, and contraindications are when not to use the drug, interactions that may occur when taken with other drugs or foods, and some of the most common product names, their usual dosages, and comments on administration. So again, under a drug classification is all of these things that are used to describe the drugs in that classification. Within a drug classification, you may also be given a prototype. And a prototype is just a model example, and it basically exemplifies, or that drug represents, all of the other drugs in that classification. For example, propranolol or Inderol is the prototype of beta adrenergic blockers. Now, in your textbook, there is a table, table 2-1, that looks at the top 10 drug classifications and gives you examples. So it shows you the drug classification, it shows you the therapeutic use, and then gives you examples for those drugs. So again, I'll have you refer to that table within your book, but just to pull a few things out for you while you're listening as far as examples. So one of the classifications within this table is narcotic analgesics. The therapeutic use for these is relieving severe pain. And some drug examples for drugs within the narcotic analgesics classification are hydrocodone with acetaminophen, oxycodone, oxymorphone, and fentanyl. Another example that can be found within your textbook that's a part of these top drug classifications is, let's take another drug classification such as antibiotics. So antibiotics is the drug classification, and eliminating infection is the therapeutic use. Some of the main drug examples from this classification of antibiotics are amoxicillin, cefalexin, and doxycycline. So in addition to looking at drug classifications, we can also identify drugs by the names that they go by. Now, one specific drug could go by a multitude of different names. So four specific names that can apply to each approved drug are the generic name, the trade name, the chemical name, and then the official name. So the generic name is the common or general name that's assigned to the drug by the United States Adopted Name Council. And the generic name is never capitalized. So we can tell the difference from the generic name to the trade name because the generic name is always in lowercase letters. It is never capitalized. The trade name, on the other hand, is what's known as the proprietary or brand named. So the pharmaceutical company that owns this product owns this name, and it identifies its product by this trade name. Now, this trade name is copyrighted, and it's used only exclusively by that particular pharmacological company. It's distinguished from the generic name by using a capitalized first letter, and often it's on labels followed by a registered trademark symbol. Okay, so generic name is a general assigned name. It's never capitalized. A trade name is given to a drug by that particular pharmaceutical company. It's copyrighted. It's capitalized by its first letter, and it's often followed by a registered trademark. Now, the chemical name is the exact molecular formula of the drug. It's usually very long, very difficult to pronounce, and it's not typically used by healthcare professionals. It's just not really practical for us to identify the drug by its chemical name. And then there's the official name. This is generally the same as the generic name, and it's the name of the drug as it appears in the official reference, the United States Pharmacopoeia National Formulary. So again, the use of generic and trade names can be likened to grocery shopping. So the example that your textbook gives that I think is a good example is you're going shopping for laundry detergent, okay? And the generic example of that would just be calling it detergent. Now, a trade name for that detergent could be Tide or Cheer. So again, although there's only one generic name for it, detergent, there can be many trade names for it, like Tide or Cheer. So again, you want to remember that other identifying names for a drug can be generic name, a trade name, a chemical name, and then the official name, which is often the generic name. So table 2-2 in your textbook gives you a good comparison of what the generic name is, what the chemical name looks like, and some various trade names. So for example, the generic name is doxycycline hyclate. The chemical name is something I will not even attempt to say, but you can read it in table 2-2. You can see why this chemical name is not practical for healthcare providers to use on a daily basis. And then the trade name for that are things like vibramycin and doxycycline hyclate. So again, that helps you see kind of the differences as far as generic and trade names. Now again, obviously it's important for any healthcare professional that's going to be administering and dispensing medications to be able to accurately identify them and accurately choose, essentially, the right medication. Now, for those of us that might not be dispensing or administering medications on a daily basis, we might be thinking, why is this important for us to know? It is still important for us to know because, again, as healthcare professionals, our patients look at us as knowledge holders, right? They expect us to know answers and they often ask us questions. And so it's important for us to be able to be informed and educated so that we can provide accurate and safe patient education to our patients. So for example, patients may ask you about the difference between generic and trade or brand names. So again, things to remember that you can communicate to your patients are that the FDA regulates the manufacturing of generic drugs. So they can be assured that they're safe and cost-effective alternatives. Typically, the trade names are more expensive, but the basic active ingredients in that drug are the same as the generic. The higher price typically helps to pay for the cost of that drug development and advertisements that promote that specific drug name. All right, so we've been talking about a variety of ways to identify drugs. So legal terms that are referring to drugs are another way that we could reference drugs. So we may hear the following terms, and again, these relate to the legal accessibility of a drug. So over-the-counter drugs, legend drugs, and controlled substance. So over-the-counter drugs have no purchasing restrictions by the FDA and are, just like they sound, available over-the-counter. Now, obviously, there are some minor exceptions where you might have to go get a drug behind a pharmacy counter. But again, for our purposes here, over-the-counter drug is no purchasing restrictions by the FDA. They are, in fact, available over-the-counter. A legend drug, this is a prescription drug. So this is a drug that's determined unsafe for over-the-counter purchase because of possible harmful side effects. And so therefore it requires a physician's or healthcare provider prescription in order to obtain this drug. And then a controlled substance are drugs that are controlled by prescription requirement because of the danger of addiction or abuse. And it's indicated in references by its scheduled numbers. And again, remember, controlled substances, those are going to be regulated by the DEA. Okay, so moving on to other terms that help us in identifying drugs. So we've outlined terms that help us identify drugs in terms of their names as well as the legal accessibility to the drugs. But now we're going to look at some terms that indicate what the drug does or how it works. So we're going to be looking at terms indicating drug actions. So indications. Indications is a list of medical conditions or diseases for which the drug is meant to be used for. For example, Benadryl is a commonly used drug for an allergic skin reaction. Actions, a description of the cellular changes that occur as a result of the drug. So this information tends to be very technical because it describes the cellular and tissue changes that occur within the body because of this medication. So now this information is geared more towards pharmacists, but again, it tells us exactly how this drug works in the body. So for example, Benadryl is an antihistamine. So it competes with histamine for cell receptor sites on effector cells. That's the action of Benadryl. It's how it works. Contraindications is a list of conditions for which the drug should not be given. So two common contraindications for Benadryl are breastfeeding and hypersensitivity. Cautions, a list of conditions or types of patients that warrant closer observation for specific side effects when given this drug. So for example, Benadryl must be used cautiously with patients who have a history of bronchial asthma or glaucoma. Side effects and adverse reactions. This is a list of possible unpleasant or dangerous secondary effects other than the desired effect. So for example, side effects of Benadryl include sedation, dizziness, disturbed coordination, anorexia, etc. This listing may be quite extensive with as many as 50 or more side effects for one drug. Because it's difficult to know which are most likely to occur, it's helpful to choose a reference that kind of highlights the most common side effects. So that can be a helpful tool for you when looking at the side effects. Interactions is a list of other drugs or foods that may alter the effect of the drug and usually should not be given during the same course of therapy. So again, going with their example of Benadryl, monoamine oxidase inhibitors, or MAOIs, will intensify the effects of Benadryl and should not be used in conjunction with Benadryl. Other things that you can refer to in a drug reference for how the drug works or how it should be given would be things like how it's supplied or the usual dosage. So this will tell you the available forms of the drug, the strength of the drug, as well as the amount of the drug that's usually considered safe. So again, we've been talking about various references that you can utilize to help you refer to these things we've been talking about. So to look up a trade name of a medication or an action or contraindication, etc. We all know that the internet is used as a very real reference and resource for not just our patients, but for us. And so I did want to pull out some information from your book that talks about using the internet as a reference. So again, the internet does offer a wealth of information regarding medications and conditions, but it is important that we are making sure that our patients and us are referring to sources that are going to be reliable, professional, and legitimate. So again, we just have to take care with what websites we use to give us information, especially when it comes to this type of information about drug sources. And so your textbook does a good job of providing you some reliable professional resources for medical information. And that can be found within your textbook again in chapter 2. So make sure you're looking at that. So again, just as a recap of what we've covered, not only did we just cover making sure that we're using reliable sources, and if we're going to use the internet, making sure we're using professional resources, but we've spent most of our time in this podcast looking at how to identify drugs. And so again, we've talked about looking at drug classifications, which are how drugs are classified according to their therapeutic use. We've talked about different names that can be used to identify the drugs. We talked about four specific ones in particular: generic, trade, chemical, and the official name. We also talked about legal accessibility for drugs and the terms that can be used for those, which are over-the-counter drug, legend drug, and controlled substance. And then we also spent some time talking about terms that indicate drug action. So we reviewed indications, actions, contraindications, cautions, side effects and adverse reactions, and interactions. I hope you found this podcast helpful. Again, you want to use that in conjunction with the information in your lesson folder and chapter 2. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. Hello, everyone, and welcome to part 3 of our Pharmacology Basics podcast. This is Jeanette, and we will be going over the topic of general effects of medications on the body. As always, I just want to provide a reminder that these podcasts are meant to be used as a supplemental resource, so in conjunction with your assigned readings, topic pages, and all other information that can be found within the lesson folders. So again, you want to make sure that you are referencing and reading chapter 3 in your textbook. And again, the information covered in this podcast specifically will be found within chapter 3, Sources and Bodily Effects of Drugs. So just like your due dates map references, we are going to be focusing in this podcast what the general effects of medication are on the body. So when introduced into the body, all drugs cause cellular changes known as drug actions, followed by some physiological change, which is essentially the effect of the drug on the body. So generally, drug effects can be categorized as systemic or local. So when we say that something has a systemic effect, this means that it reaches a widespread area of the body. For example, ibuprofen is often used as an analgesic and anti-inflammatory for pain. Although you would feel that effect perhaps in your knee, if that's what it's taken for knee pain, you would also find the same effects all over the body, which is why you can use it for a variety of painful things such as cramps or a headache, etc. Now, a local effect is that drug's effect on the body is limited to one specific area of the body where it is administered. So, for example, a local numbing agent would only provide that effect on that local area of the body. The example that your book uses is Dubicane ointment, which is applied rectally. And so that's only going to provide numbing relief to the rectal mucosa to reduce hemorrhoidal pain. So again, the two types of effects typically that we categorize for the body is either systemic effects. So again, that means it has a widespread impact on the body, on many areas of the body, or it just has a local effect. It only impacts the area of the body where it's been administered. We also want to talk about the drug processing by the body, which is called pharmacokinetics. So kinetic means movement. Therefore, pharmacokinetics literally means what happens to the drug as it moves through our body. I'll say that again. Pharmacokinetics literally means what happens to the drug as it moves through our body. Again, a way to remember that is kinetic means movement. So pharmacokinetics is moving through our body. So within the body, drugs undergo several changes from start to finish. The biological changes consist of four processes, abbreviated as ADME, absorption, distribution, metabolism, excretion. Absorption is the passage of the substance through a membrane into our bloodstream. Distribution is moving from the bloodstream into the various tissues and fluids of the body. Metabolism, physical and chemical alterations that the substance undergoes in the body. Excretion, eliminating waste products of drug metabolism from the body. So again, many variables can affect how quickly or successfully these substances go through these four processes. If any of the four processes are altered, that could alter the effects of the drug and its actions. And it can either result in a greater or lesser effect of the medication, or even a shorter or longer duration of the drug itself. Again, your book is a great resource for expanding on this information. So table 3-1 provides a nice table that organizes each process that we talked about, ADME. It talks about primary sites of the process and conditions that could alter this process. So I would highly encourage you to check table 3-1 out within your readings. Your readings are also going to go in further detail regarding absorption, distribution, metabolism, and excretion. So make sure that you are looking at those things carefully. So other variables affecting drug actions. So there are many variables that affect the speed and efficiency of drugs being processed by the body. The physical properties of the drugs themselves and the condition of the bodies, we've already talked about that. So other variables that affect drug action and effect are age, weight, gender, psychological state, and drug interactions. So age, essentially metabolism and excretion are slower in older adults, and therefore we want to make sure that we're paying attention to this because this can result in more cumulative effects of a drug. Also, children tend to have a lower threshold of response and react more rapidly and sometimes unexpectedly to drugs. We want to pay attention to that variable age. In regards to the variable weight, generally the bigger the person, the greater the dose should be. However, there is a lot of variety in how each individual is going to be sensitive to drugs. So you want to pay close attention to that. That's why also many drug dosages are calculated based on a patient's weight. Now, with certain drugs in patients who are obese, it's typically best to calculate their dose on ideal body weight rather than their total body weight. And again, that would be per the drug, per facility requirements. Again, for our purposes, it's good to be aware that weight can be a variable in the drug effects on the body. Gender is also another variable. Women can tend to respond differently than men to some drugs. This can be influenced by the ratio of fat her body mass as well as the different types of hormones in females versus males. This can also be exaggerated if a female is pregnant or nursing. And then it's also really important to make sure that we're only selecting drugs that are safe to use for both the mother and her child. Psychological state. It's also been proven that the more positive that someone feels about the medication that's being taken, the more positive of a physical response they're going to have. This is called the placebo effect. So again, those additional variables are age, weight, gender, and psychological state. Now, drug interactions. Drug interactions is something we also want to spend a few minutes focusing on because patients are often prescribed multiple drugs, especially if they're in an acute care situation or they're in a facility being taken care of. It's likely that they have multiple drugs that are on board. So whenever more than one drug is taken, it is possible that that combination can alter the typical normal response of just an individual drug. So one drug may interact with another to increase, decrease, or cancel out the effects of the other. So we use the following terms to describe drug interactions. Synergism. So synergism is the action of two drugs working together in which one helps the other simultaneously for an effect that neither could produce alone. So drugs that work together are said to be synergistic. Potentiation. The action of two drugs in which one prolongs or multiplies the effect of the other drug. So in potentiation, drug A would potentiate or prolong or multiply the effect of drug B. This interaction is often used in pain medications. And then the third type of way to describe a drug interaction would be antagonism. So the opposing action of two drugs in which one decreases or cancels out the effect of the other. So in other words, drug A would be referred to as an antagonist of drug B if it decreased or canceled out the effect of drug B. So it's important for anyone prescribing medications to be aware of these types of drug interactions in order to be able to prevent the undesirable ones. So synergism, these are some examples that are found within your textbook as well. Simvastatin or Zocor that lowers high cholesterol and gemfibrozil or Lopid, which lowers high triglycerides, are very effective in treating patients who have both of these conditions, high cholesterol and high triglycerides, together. So by giving small amounts of each other, these can be treated more effectively. So that's why these medications have a synergism effect. Now, potentiation can be used from the example of penicillin and probenecid. So to build up a high level of some forms of penicillin, which is an antibiotic, the drug probenecid, or an anti-gout medication, can be given simultaneously. So probenecid potentiates or increases or prolongs the effects of penicillin by slowing its excretion rate of the antibiotic. An example of antagonism is with a narcotic antagonist called naloxone, or most popularly known as Narcan, which saves lives from drug overdoses because it simply reverses the clinical effect of a narcotic. So in this example, Narcan would be drug A, and it cancels out the effects of other narcotics, which would be drug B. Other things that we want to pay attention to in regards to the drug and how it impacts the body is the dosage. So the dosage is defined as the amount of a drug given for a particular therapeutic or desired effect. So some of the terms that we want to review together in regards to dosage are minimum dose, maximum dose, loading dose, maintenance dose, toxic dose, lethal dose, and therapeutic dose. Minimum dose, these are really how they sound. So the smallest amount of the drug that will produce a therapeutic or desired effect. Maximum dose, the largest amount of a drug that will produce that same desired effect. And this is the key, without producing symptoms of toxicity. Loading dose is an initial high dose, typically the maximum dose, that's used to quickly elevate the level of the drug in the blood. Typically, a loading dose is then followed by a series of lower maintenance doses. Now, a maintenance dose is the dose that's required to keep the level of a drug in the blood at a steady state to keep that therapeutic or desired effect. A toxic dose is the amount of that drug that will produce harmful side effects or symptoms of poisoning. A lethal dose would be a dose that causes death, and a therapeutic dose that is customarily given, it's adjusted according to variations from the norm. Okay, routes of administration. So next we want to look at the route of administration is probably one of the most significant factors in the speed of drug action. So again, why do routes of administration relate to what we're talking about in regards to effects of medications on the body? It's because the route that we administer at has a really significant factor in influencing the speed of the drug action. So the route of drug administration can be compared to the route of travel. In planning a trip from point A to point B, you may have to have a map that shows several courses of travel to the destination. So the course that you select is optional, depending on your choice for the quickest, cheapest, safest, or most scenic route. So again, your book is really going through an example here that compares the route of drug administration to selecting travel. And so oftentimes, just like with routes of administration for drugs, and just like traveling, we might have several options on how to get there, and that's going to impact how fast we get there, what our experience is like while we're traveling there, etc. So the most common routes of administration can be grouped into two main categories. So this is enteral, or the GI tract routes, and parenteral routes, which basically are any route that is not the GI tract. So enteral, or GI tract routes, include oral, PO, nasogastric tube, NG, and gastric tube, and rectal, R or PR, per rectum. Now, parenteral routes, again, include any route that is not the GI tract. So these are typically your injection routes, intravenous, IV, intramuscular, IM, subcutaneous, sub-Q, intradermal, ID, and then also other routes such as intracardiac, intraosseous, intraspinal, intraventricular, and intracapsular. Now, these ones that I just shared with you, the intracardiac, intraosseous, intraspinal, intraventricular, and intracapsular, are less common and are typically administered by a physician. There's also non-injectable routes that are a part of parenteral routes, or non-GI. These non-injectable routes, or standalone routes, are sublingual, which is noted by SL, under the tongue, or buccal, which is in the cheek. These are absorbed through the mucosa in the mouth, and they are not swallowed. Now, it does get a little tricky. Sometimes sublingual and buccal are referred to oral routes, but for our purposes, these are going to be the non-injectable routes that are standalone and are parenteral routes. Transdermal or dermal, noted by a D, are skin patches that allow the drug to be slowly absorbed systemically. Topical, T, ophthalmic, eyes, otic, ears, transvaginal, nasal, and inhalation. Again, all of those are non-injectable forms of a parenteral route. So there are advantages and disadvantages in the use of each of these routes. So typically the physician will pick the route of administration depending on the desired effects. So does the physician want a fast or slow, or local or systemic effect? Based on absorption qualities of the drug and how the drug is supplied. So other things are taken into account when we pick a route, or rather when the physician picks a route for drug absorption. So typically the oral route is the easiest, but the effects tend to be the slowest because of the time required for the drug to dissolve and through the alimentary canal before it can get absorbed. The intravenous or IV route typically tends to be the fastest because it directly enters the bloodstream immediately. Doses to be given IV are given in small amounts. Effects are typically immediate, but could also be very dangerous if we don't get that amount correct, right? IV drugs can be administered by an IV push or a bolus, or they can be slowly infused via an IV drip. Your book goes through some other things that you may want to know about IVs in regards to who administers those. Something else important to note about IVs is that it is the best route for treatment of emergencies because of its speed of action. Parenteral routes are often the choice when patients can't take anything by mouth. So perhaps they're going to surgery and they need to be kept NPO or nothing by mouth. The drug is not suitable for GI absorption. Typically, also, the intramuscular route can be fairly rapid because muscles are highly vascular. So if it is desirable to slow the speed of absorption, the drug may be given, IM may be added to an oily base. The transdermal route allows for slower, consistent drug absorption over time, allowing the patient to usually place one patch in the morning for the entire day. The inhalation route is fast acting due to a large surface area of the lungs and a rich blood supply. So this route often requires more involved patient cooperation though, and therefore we have to make sure that the patient is able to understand and follow the instructions that we would be giving them for that route. Other things that we want to talk about are unexpected responses to drugs. So when a side effect cause the patient to have a negative reaction, it is termed an adverse drug reaction. So there are several terms that we use when we're talking about adverse drug effects. Some of the ones I want to review with you are teratogenic effect. Excuse me, I'll say that again. Teratogenic effect. So this is an effect from maternal drug administration that can cause physical defects in a fetus. Idiosyncratic reaction is a unique, unusual, and unexpected response to a drug, and a paradoxical reaction, which is essentially the opposite effect from what is expected. For example, a patient may have a paradoxical reaction to a tranquilizer that causes them agitation and excitement rather than tranquility. Tolerance. Tolerance is a decreased response to a drug that develops after repeated doses are given. To achieve the desired effect, the drug dosage must be increased or the drug must be replaced. Dependence is an acquired need for a drug that may produce psychological or physical symptoms of withdrawal when we discontinue this. Hypersensitivity is an immune response, so typically allergy to a drug, of varying degrees, so it could be mild all the way up to fairly severe. An anaphylactic reaction, now this is a severe, possibly fatal. All right, class, I wanted to continue on with the pharmacology principles concerning the effects of medications on the body. So we were discussing adverse reactions and terms that describe adverse reactions. So I want to finish up with just a few more terms and then a recap. So tolerance. Tolerance is a decreased response to a drug that develops after repeated doses are given. So to achieve the desired effect, the drug must be increased, the dosage must be increased of that drug, or the drug must be replaced. Dependence is when a person acquires a need for a drug that can produce either a physiological or psychological symptoms of withdrawal when the drug is discontinued. A hypersensitivity is an immune response or allergy to a drug. It can have varying degrees to mild or no immediate effects. An anaphylactic reaction is a severe, possibly fatal, allergic hypersensitivity response. Signs of an anaphylactic reaction include things like itching, urticaria or hives, hyperemia or reddened warm skin, vascular collapse, shock, cyanosis, laryngeal edema, and dyspnea. Typically, treatment includes CPR, as indicated, including other drugs associated with that, such as epinephrine, etc. All right, so again, that concludes this part three section or discussion of our of the general effects of medications on the body. So again, you want to make sure that you're referencing chapter three in your textbook. A quick recap of the things that we've covered. So we were able to cover a lot of information within this chapter and within this podcast. Again, when we're looking at how drugs impact the body, we first looked at two main categories of effects in the body, which was a systemic effect and a local effect. Then we looked at how the body actually processes a drug, or more specifically, pharmacokinetics. And we talked about how kinetic means movement, and therefore pharmacokinetics literally means what happens to the drug as it moves through the body. We looked at the four drug processes that occur with biological changes as the drug moves through the body, abbreviated as ADME, or absorption, distribution, metabolism, and excretion. We talked about other variables that impact how the drug moves throughout the body, such as age, weight, gender, and psychological state. We also defined drug interactions and talked about varying terms that are used to describe the different types of drug interactions, including synergism, potentiation, and antagonism. We also talked about dosage and talked about a varying amount of terms used to describe dosage levels. We also talked about routes of administration, specifically the main two types of administration routes, enteral and then parenteral. We talked about the various types under these categories and some of the advantages or disadvantages to these different routes. Again, we talked about unexpected responses to drugs, including adverse drug reactions. And lastly, we defined various terms used to describe adverse drug reactions. Once again, I hope that this is a helpful resource for you and that you can utilize it along with your chapter readings and topic pages. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to ask. Thanks all.